This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Stephen Skelton, Master Wine and English Wine Expert. How are you, Stephen?
I'm very well, thanks. Very well.
Excellent. You started out growing grapes for Chapel Down, or before it was called Chapel Down?
Well, no, the vineyard I own has now become Chapel Down. Yeah, no, we started that in 76, so a long while ago now, 34 years.
Yeah, it's a fair old time being in trade. You've seen a lot of changes.
Quite a few.
Excellent. But what we're going to be talking about today is your new wine book, which is going to be released, well, should be about the same time as this show's going out, which is...
Yeah, well, sort of, I hope mid-June.
Mid-June. So we'll see. If the show goes out in December, we'll know missed the deadline.
I'm sort of at the top of the hill and I can see the bottom, so we're you know, almost ham and dry on it.
Fantastic. What's the book called?
Well, it's the UK Vineyards Guide 2008, but it's an update, really, of the previous two books I've written, which follows the same format.
Yep.
The front section is a sort of historical, plus what we're doing today, viticulture, vinification, grape varieties, some statistics about wine production and so forth. Then in the back, there's all the vineyards listed. I think I've got 360 vineyards listed, and a little bit of information about most of them, and obviously all the contact details, addresses and so forth of the others.
Okay, I've got a copy of the old one. When was that?
The 01.
I noticed.
And that was written really in 99, so it's 7 or 8 years sort of out of date, really.
It is out of date.
Yeah. Well, a lot of vineyards, unfortunately, have disappeared. A lot of new ones as well.
Sure. And also, there's been a big stylistic change in the wines produced.
There has, yes. The area of the old varieties, you know, things like Müller-Thurgau, Bacchus, Hux-Arabe, Reichenstein and Madeleine Langevin, those sort of stalwarts have diminished. And varieties, obviously, such as Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, have come to the top. Those two are now occupying, I estimate, about 40% of the UK's 1,250 hectares and are number one and number two varieties, Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
Julia from English Wine Producers, the marketing body for it, said you've got better statistics than they have on what's out there.
Well, I've got better statistics than the Wine Standards Board, I think, because they only collect them every 3 years, and a lot can happen in 3 years.
Sure.
And I've got contacts with the people who are doing the planting, so I know what's going in roughly this year, 2008, so which wouldn't appear on the radar from the official point of view for at least a couple of years.
So what is going in this year?
Well, it's, you know, again, we've got mainly, but not only, but mainly Pinot Noir and Chardonnay for sparkling. A bit of Pinot Meunier, some Pinot Blanc, some Auxerrois. There's a bit of Bacchus, a bit of Riesling. There's a few smaller people doing the odd varieties, the old varieties maybe, that they'll try. Quite a few reds. People are still plugging away with these red varieties, things like Regent and Rondo and Dornfelder, Dunkelfelder. Pinot Noir, obviously, as well for reds, which I think is very successful because you can use it for red, rosé or sparkling, depending on the climate, depending on the weather and the year.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people doing, in terms of sheer numbers, there's lots of vineyards, new vineyards, which are doing sort of smaller operations and a few much bigger ones.
The average UK acreage I saw was something like 2.5 acres or hectares?
Well, average size, you know, averages are meaningless, really. It's a spread that counts. I mean, there's probably 100 vineyards under 5 acres, and then another 100 sort of between 5 and 10, and then another, you know, 50 sort of, and then there's about 50 really big ones, or 25 really big ones, and 25 sort of not quite as big ones.
Sure. Have you seen in the last 10 years since your last update that some vineyards are starting to get quite big? Because you look at things like Nye Timber with Eric's.
Well, you've got the big sort of 3/4. I mean, Nye Timber, Denbys, Chapel Down, to a certain extent, Three Choirs, are all much of the same, so 250 acres, 100 plus hectares. Ridgeview, sorry, I didn't mention those as well. So they're all pulling on, they will be. A lot of those vineyards are still young. I mean, Chapel Down has just bought 80 acres, so 32 hectares to plant, which won't, obviously, if they plant it this year, 08, they won't be cropping off it for another, you know, the product won't be coming from it for another 5 years.
Sure.
But Nye Timber will be the first with serious volumes, followed by Ridgeview. Three Choirs have a slightly different, they're sort of a slightly different organisation. They're not majoring so much on sparkling.
Yep.
They've still got a pretty strong presence in still wines of varying varieties, as have Denbys as well.
Do you think that the English wine scene is changing completely to a sparkling style?
Not completely. I think there will still be a big presence of still wines. A lot of it sold by the producers to their, from their farm gate to local outlets. I think the wine trade will more and more adopt sparkling as the standard English wine, with perhaps Bacchus being the only still wine they're really serious about.
Yeah.
And certainly from today's tasting, I thought the Bacchus wines, some of those showed up very, very well. You know, some of the sparklings were excellent, some of the sparklings were not so excellent, which is the way it goes. But we've still got work to do. We're not out of, we're not in the broad uplands yet of every year's a good year. You know, we had last year was 2007, was not a good year.
Volume-wise, or what about quality?
Volume-wise, it wasn't very hot, and quality-wise, it wasn't very good. You know, it was a cool, overcast vintage with poor flowering, which cut the volumes, and the acidities were just very difficult to get right.
Yeah.
Because it was cool in the autumn.
Yeah, and there was a lot of disease pressure.
And disease as well, that cut the volume, yeah.
Excellent. What do you think going forward, looking into the future, if you had a crystal ball of maybe 10 to 20 years into the future?
Well, you'd like to think that the serious players, who will by then have volume, will be occupying regular slots, regular facings in the major multiples, which is where the bulk of the nation's wine is sold.
Sure.
You know, I would like to think that all the major multiples, the five of them, or however many is left by then, you know, will have two, three, four sparkling wines on every shelf, eye level, throughout all their branches. Probably not going to happen, but, you know, we might get somewhere close to it. I mean, yep. Things like, you know, there are some interesting things going on there. I mean, I know that, you know, Marks & Spencer's, Tesco's are all looking. Of course, Waitrose, I'm planting a vineyard for them next year.
That's right.
So that's a very interesting, because they're aiming to double their stores, double their shelf space, double their number of stores in 10 years. So they'll go from 170 branches to 350. It's good, and they're very, very much in the southeast, where most of the interest in English wine lies. You know, the southeast of the country. That's Waitrose's heartland, really.
Sure. Do you think there's going to be any consolidation? Because there's lots of small vineyards. Do you think they'll consolidate, or do you think they'll just...
Do you know, they'll come and go like they always have. Of my 1989 book, which had 350-odd vineyards in it, only 66 remain today. Out of the 01 book, only half of the 250 are still remaining. And of this new book, of my 350-odd, half of those are new since 01. So, you know, there's a lot of vineyards have gone under... have disappeared in the last 20 years, a lot.
When you look at sort of the historical number of vineyards, there seemed to be a peak around the early 90s.
Yes, yeah.
What happened to the English wine scene after that? Why was there a peak then and it dropped away?
I think it was, you know, during the sort of late 70s and 80s, we started selling wine in 79, up until about the mid-80s, end of the 80s. I mean, I took over at Lamberhurst in 88. So I was the winemaker there till 91. We were selling, you know, quite serious quantities into the trade, and then suddenly things changed. You know, the old sort of Germanic varieties got a bit of a knocking. We were getting, you know, the Australian wines were coming onto the market, New Zealand wines, Chilean wines. The whole wine scene was changing, and the old style German wines were getting less and less shelf space. And English wine came under pressure, you know, and suddenly people realised that there were different styles out there, and they preferred those Australian styles, Jacob's Creek and that sort of, you know, product. And a lot of people just couldn't market the wine they were producing. Some people had planted quite big acreages. You know, there was Andy Vining Wello had got, I think, 80 acres or thereabouts. Barkham Manor was about 50 acres, you know, and they just could not cope with the marketing of that style of wine. And so a bit of a depression in the fun, you know, economically turned down, and people started grabbing grapes. You know, you can't keep stacking up vintages, especially if it's still wine. You know, people want, you know, there's a lot of interest in the sort of a couple of 07s on the table today. You know, everyone wants to taste them. What do they taste like? You know, it's the new vintage. But in the sparklings, of course, everyone's saying, oh, 2001, oh, that's, you know, got a bit of age to it. Let's try that. Could be quite good. You know, age is actually a benefit in sparkling wine.
Sure.
And that makes a great deal of difference to your marketing. You know,
do you think that gives them flexibility?
Well, it gives them flexibility. It also, of course, means you have a lot more money tied up.
Yeah.
You know, for every year that you have to extra age it, you've got a year without sales.
Yep.
You've got a year of, you know, bottles, concrete, air conditioning, crates. I mean, you know, it's all expense. So it puts a strain on the capital, but it does allow you perhaps to get into your marketing slightly more easily. But when you've got still wine, when you've got vintage after vintage stacking up, you're not selling it, you've got a big vineyard, you know, you've only got two options, really. You know, what you do, slash the price, try and get rid of it, cut the production, that's always difficult. It's a very difficult thing to do if you've got a lot of still wine, you know, trying to find a market for it.
So do you think the current expansion of the English wines at the moment is a function that they've found another product that the market wants?
They think the market wants it.
Yeah, because
the market's been taking, you know, Knight Timber is still only producing 35,000-40,000 bottles a year. Yeah. Ridgeview is about the same. When they go to 10 times that, 20 times that, will the market be there? This is the unknown. Who knows? Yeah. I mean, there's a big, you know, sparkling wine. Yeah, sparkling wine. You know, we are the biggest export market for champagne. We're the biggest export market for Carver. We're the biggest export market for a number of sparkling wines. You know, we drink a lot of sparkling. We're a lot of us. And we drink a lot of sparkling wine, and you can read various. I mean, I heard champagne sales were up 40% last year. I think that's probably a lie, but
24% well, in the UK.
Yeah, in the UK. Yeah, I think we're probably, you know, there's probably sort of 10-15% increase in sparkling wine sales, which, when you look at the number of bottles, is far more than the English wine producers are ever producing.
Sure.
So I think we could get into that market, but we've got to have quality on the product, quality on the packaging, quality operations in terms of fulfilling what retailers and wholesalers want out of you in terms of deliveries and all that that goes with it. You know, life today, I'm afraid, is too short to be faffing about with the suppliers who don't, you know, fulfill what you want. They want an they order wine, it's got to be there.
Yeah, sure.
Packaged properly, delivered properly, safely, next day virtually. And that's what suppliers want. A lot of small growers are not cut out for that.
Have you had a look at, obviously, in your time, you know the economics of vineyards quite well. A lot of English whites and reds come in around, say, £8 to £11 price point. Is that a profitable price point? Because the climate means you're not going to get big crops.
You can't say what's a profitable price point. You can't say. It's very, very difficult to, you naturally try and make as much money as you want. You charge what the market will bear. If the market would take £20 a bottle for all the sparkling wine made, then that's what people would charge.
Yep.
You know, they will adjust their prices accordingly. People often say, well, English wine's expensive, isn't it? Well, it depends what you're comparing it to. I mean, it's not expensive compared to Tavel Rosé, which sells for phenomenal amounts of money, or good Sancerre, or top champagnes. But it is expensive compared to cheap bulk wines from countries which can make cheap bulk wines. But, you know, if you priced every bottle you'd ever made at £1, you wouldn't have any left. Priced at £50, you'd have every bottle you ever made left. So, you know, between, you pitch your price according to your perceived demand and your supply. And as supplies increase, you tend to be slightly more relaxed about discounts and so forth, and vice versa. English wine is the price it is, full stop.
Do you think...
if you don't want to buy it, don't buy it. I mean, if people didn't buy it, it wouldn't be this price.
For sure.
Yeah. And you have to manage your stocks. In a climate like ours, stocks are uncertain, yields are uncertain. So, you know, you have to manage your stocks, and you don't want to keep too much in stock. So, you know, probably keep 2 years, 2.5, still wine anyway, 2.5 years stock in stock with, you know, one in tank, one in bottle, with a half a year sort of in the sales process. So, you know, if you said, well, we must keep 3 years in stock, that's a lot of money tied up, and then you've got selling wines which are a little bit older. So price is a mechanism of keeping pace with demand and supply, really.
What about the sparkling wines? You know, most English sparkling wines I see are vintage sparkling wines.
Yeah.
We don't see a lot of non-vintage, and it seems crazy because the French say they do it to get consistency, yet we've got a worse climate than them.
Unfortunately, people get locked into this vintage problem, which is when you start growing, of course, your first wine is a vintage.
Yeah.
So what do? You release it as a non-vintage, or release it as a vintage? No, you release it as a vintage because that's where people's perceptions of money lie. You know, they think a vintage wine is going to be more expensive.
Yeah.
And because once you're locked into that vintage cycle, you can't really get out of it. I don't really see it as a problem. I mean, Chapel Down, which is the market leader in terms of volume, you know, their non-vintage white probably outsells everything by a factor of 10. You know, that's non-vintage. It's not made from classic varieties. It's made from Müller, Reisterstein. I think there's a bit of Pinot Noir in it. a very good product for the price. It's actually £17 I see now, which I think is getting up there a little bit.
Yeah, it's creeping up. Everything's creeping up quite a bit.
Everything's creeping up. Well, duty's gone up. Yeah. Cost of bottles have gone up. You know, yeah, things are going up.
Sure.
That's the same throughout the wine trade. We're not working in euros, of course, which virtually all the rest of the wine trade are.
Okay. Just getting back to your book. Obviously, it's how long has it been? 7 years? Eight? No, longer than
seven years. Well, really, eight years since the information was put in there, yeah.
Do you think you'll do another one in 8 years, or do you think?
Well, it's being published on a printing on demand, so it's published on Lulu, www.lulu.com, which is how I published my viticulture book.
Yep.
It's a very flexible system. I can update it virtually instantly, and so I'm hoping that I'll have 2008 will be this version. I'm hoping that I shall be able to update it every year.
Oh, lovely.
That's the plan.
Oh, good. So it's going to be more of a...
More topical, yeah. Updated every year with more new information, new vineyards, and keep the thing really up to date.
And lulu.com is the place to buy it, is it?
That's right. Yeah, that's the place to buy it.
Okay, and do you know what it's going to be selling for?
The current...
not enough?
I think 1995. I think that's the current price.
And it's quite a thick book. It's about 300 pages.
It'll be more than that. Yeah, it will be. I think it's probably over 400.
Really?
Yeah.
I've used it to dip into, and
I'm sure. Yeah,
I've never read it cover to cover.
Oh well, there you are. You should do.
I haven't got the time.
No,
it's a bit hard work. I find it more of a reference book.
Well, that's what it's for. Yeah, it's a reference book. Yeah, the front. I mean, the historical section. You know, the last book won the André Simon Wine Book of the Year. So I have great hopes for this one. Might do the same thing.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right then, Steve.
Okay, Chris. Good to meet you.
Cheers.
Good to speak to you. Thank you.
Bye.